morning. If it pleases the court, I'm Matthew LaFondi. I am the plaintiff in this case. On April 4th, 2008, the D.C. Circuit decided Griffith v. Lanier, 077072, a class action lawsuit pled under 42 United States Code 1983. Judge Henderson was a part of the panel that heard the oral argument in that case. A critical issue decided in Griffith was regarding the right of MPD reserve police officers to collectively voice their views to the Metropolitan Police Department. This organization had been in existence de facto for some 50 years without any law specifically providing for its existence. Over the previous almost two decades, there were ordinary processes for due process to be heard in disciplinary matters, an issue which I asserted was fundamentally important for folks who were performing discretionary police duties on behalf of the District of Columbia government. The Griffith Court found standing to raise a facial challenge, as the court found that the general order, which had been recently promulgated and complained of in the Griffith case, would, on the reserve officer's asserted reading, tend to discourage their expression of opinions on collective bargaining. The Griffith Court decided, however, the reserve officer's concerns in this regard were unfounded, stating the constitutional guarantees workers' right to voice their views to their employers. This is a constitutional right. Yet we are here today because the attorney which argued these issues before the Griffith Court has been discharged from that very organization without other cause for advocating on behalf of the reserve officers collectively as to their grievances with the Metropolitan Police Department as a result of this rulemaking.
You understand that from your brief, I'm sure you understand that you need to show us why this was a matter of public interest and not a grievance.
Yes, that's
not just a grievance.
Yes, that is certainly what I've argued.
A grievance so far.
Right, but however, as upon the District of Columbia's argument in Mezevoff, the district court's dismissal of my First Amendment claim cannot be reconciled with the law of NAACP v. Button, and it cannot be reconciled with the Griffith decision.
Why is that a matter of public interest? I'm still waiting for you to tell us why this is a matter of public interest.
Okay. We have 200 folks who are providing services to the District of Columbia gratis. The District of Columbia City Council has decided in the course of legislation and signed off on by the mayor and approved by Congress, that there shall exist this core of volunteer uniformed police officers with ordinary powers of arrest and the powers, the same training and standards of conduct that an ordinary police officer would have. The D.C. City Council further stated that if there were to be any limitations upon the authority of those police officers, that would have to be made through administrative rulemaking according to the Administrative Procedures Act of the District of Columbia, which requires notice and comment procedures to the general public. Those very procedures were not followed by the omnibus, as set forth in the omnibus.
That's the matter you're saying is a public concern, right? You have 4 minutes remaining, so let's get to it. You say that's the matter of public concern. And
first,
what I want to know is why does anyone other than the affected volunteer officers care about that?
Well, obviously the general public of the District of Columbia should care about it, and it is.
Anyone else complain? It's not obvious why everyone should care about it. It seems like an internal personnel matter.
An internal personnel matter, an expansion of Connick and the subsequent case law where there's a single person has a gripe. But this is an issue that was raised by the D.C. City Council. They legislated this. They committed it to law, and they set forth an instruction to the mayor of the District of Columbia that you shall give the public notice of the...
I understand that, but the question is not giving the public notice of concern to anyone other than the people who are here.
This is a misadministration of a public resource. This is a violation of a law by public officials.
Well, so is every alleged employment action that's the subject of a lawsuit, right? I'm alleging that I was fired in violation of this or that regulation, and it's in the public interest that the regulations be followed. How is this any different?
This is different because this is a collective action by the entire group of officers, and that's never been disputed. And they have found an attorney who has advocated this on their behalf, and that implicates fundamental First Amendment rights. That collective action is set forth in Button, and as the Delaware court is very, very nicely...
Actually, were you the attorney in that action?
Yes.
Okay, so, and you're also a member of the purported class?
I was. Sure, that's my motivation. I mean, what brings the motivation of the attorney to bring in to take on difficult and costly litigation with limited chance of success is not probative to the First Amendment rights that discussed in United Transport Union versus State Bar of Michigan, United Mine Workers versus Illinois State Bar, Brotherhood of Railroad Trainmen versus Virginia State Bar, and Button. These cases clearly state there is a fundamental right to advocate on behalf of a group.
Sure, there's a right, but the question is, is it a matter of public interest that it be done?
Well, I've already...
I have a right to do a lot of things that, you know, I can put on my hat or not put on my hat, but it's not a matter of public interest.
Again, I've asserted this is a mismanagement of a public resource contrary to the mandate of the D.C. City Council, and that this is
further... The mandate being the procedural mandate.
The procedural mandate, but the underlying concept is that the District of Columbia City Council finds that this program is to the benefit of the citizens of the District of Columbia, and that it shall be administered by the fiduciary duties of its civil servants.
So to go back, your distinction between this case and any regular employment grievance or allegation that someone was fired unlawfully or what have you, is that this is for the class?
Is for the class. That's correct.
That's the distinction.
That is an important distinction. But a more important distinction is that the civil servants, the chief of the Metropolitan Police Department, is acting contrary to the law of the District
that's
of
the
Columbia
allegation.
To the detriment...
That's the allegation that the employee who's discharged makes or who doesn't get a promotion, right? That they
No,
were,
no, because there's no
better.
Element that's to the detriment of the general public.
Well, sure it is. It affects the efficiency of the public service.
I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Can I just ask, I take it your argument is not, in the normal case where an individual is complaining about being fired and objects on some ground, yours is an objection across the board to the institutional framework by which the entire Corps will be governed in the absence of this notice. Isn't that right?
I want to make sure we distinguish between the Griffith case, which is where I advocated.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes, and that was the fundamental problem. We have folks who are administering the Metropolitan Police Department who are acting contrary to the public's interest in that there's a volunteer program. People, ordinary citizens, are coming out, putting on uniforms, performing police duties, risking their lives, sometimes dying, and they are doing this for the public benefit. There is a fundamental disconnect between the provision of those that service in the public interest and the unstated interests of the administrators of the police department who are ultimately seeking more money and more power. This does not solve their problem. So there is an antagonism between those police administrators and the mandate of the D.C. City Council. That mandate was undermined by the actions taken by the Chief of Police, Charles Ramsey.
Thank you, Mr. LaFond.
morning, and may it please the Court, Carl Schifferle for the District of Columbia. Like the employee in Connick v. Myers, Mr. LaFonde was merely airing a personnel dispute. In Mr. LaFonde's case, the personnel dispute was the police chief's failure to grant Mr. LaFonde and other reserve officers the rights and powers of regular police officers. The Griffith lawsuit was a mere extension of this personnel dispute, and thus does not address a matter of public concern. The Griffith lawsuit concerned ordinary, standard personnel matters, the existence and the extent of job protection for a certain type of employee, the scope and responsibility of that employee's position, access to training, and so forth.
How about the allegation that the chief of police violated the D.C. code in promulgating the general order and emergency rule? I mean, why isn't that more like Hall with the violations of NCAA rules, or Tao, even Tao with racial discrimination, or O'Donnell with important issues of police department policy? I mean, the chief of police is required to follow any procedure, and why isn't that, if he doesn't, why isn't that a matter of public concern?
First, it's merely a procedural mandate that the substance still is nevertheless a personnel matter, even if the procedure relates to a personnel matter. That procedure, that regulation, statute, whatever personnel regulation is involved, if it's merely of a procedural nature and merely governs personnel matters, that does not transform.
So if I'm entitled to 30 days notice and I don't get it, that's not a by law, by rule, by regulation, and I don't get it, that just concerns me and not, let's make it closer to this case, no one gets the 10-day notice, even though it's on the books. That's not a matter of public concern. I don't see why you denigrate procedure.
I don't know if I'm denigrating procedure. I'm merely arguing that the procedure has to relate to some substance, and the ultimate question is, what is that substance? Is it a personnel matter, or is it something greater than that? For example, in Hall, there was a violation of athletic rules, and specifically that ineligible athletes were playing on university teams, that athletic scholarships were given to ineligible candidates, the changing of student grades so that ineligible students could play on university teams, athletes' use of drugs. Those were all allegations.
What was the general order here and the emergency order? What was it that the chief of police instigated? I don't remember.
The general order was a basic regulation of the reserve officer program, setting forth the basic responsibilities, duties of reserve officers, guidelines.
Why is that police department policy under O'Donnell?
In the O'Donnell case, for example, again, it has to go beyond just merely a personnel matter, and O'Donnell did. O'Donnell dealt with subjects like the unsolved, there were 100 unsolved murders and the priority given to that, and the fact that was the subject of a newspaper article, critical of the department's handling of the investigation of those murders, how to reform the operations of a property division when it was reflected in later news reports that property division was in need of reform. There were factors there that clearly demonstrated that these issues substantively were of public concern. The mere technical violation of a personnel regulation when the government happens to extensively regulate personnel matters does not transform what is in substance a personnel matter into a matter of public concern. And I believe the cases Your Honor cited are quite distinguishable.
So are you saying any personnel matter? I mean, I read these cases as more if one person has a grievance, that's not necessarily and oftentimes not at all a matter of public concern under the precedent. But it sounds to me like you're saying if it's a personnel matter, no matter how categorical, no matter how widespread it affects every employee, it's not a matter of public concern. That's like saying public employees are not a matter of public concern.
No, Your Honor, I'm saying there has to be something else. There has to be something more. I'm not saying that a personnel matter is necessarily exclusive of something that's a public concern. But there has to be that something more, that
like
something
what?
Additional.
Like what?
Like the in O'Donnell, for example, the priority given to over 100 unsolved murders. That's something that would be, and this court has held, would be of public concern. It's not simply just a personnel
well,
matter.
Not even a personnel matter. What is the extra thing you would add to make a personnel matter a matter of public concern?
For example, in Connick, the one aspect of the employee's speech in Connick that was considered to be a public concern was pressure to work on political campaigns. And to some extent, obviously, if employees are pressured to work on political campaigns, that could be characterized as a personnel matter. But it's not just a personnel matter. There's something more, and that pressure to work on political campaigns is what raises it to the level of public concern. And my point is there's nothing here in this case to raise what is a personnel matter beyond just a personnel matter to something that truly is a public concern.
Let me see if I understand what happened here. So the general order that was issued said that MPD reserve officers shall serve at the pleasure of the chief of police without limitation and such, and who shall have the authority to determine whether to remove somebody, and the determination shall not be subject to administrative review. Right, that's part of this general order.
Yes.
And that was issued without notice and comment as an emergency matter. Is that right?
If I could distinguish, there was a general order which was purely internal, and then there was a rulemaking that was published in the D.C. Register.
Which
that
put
was,
this into effect without notice and comment, right?
The rulemaking went into immediate effect.
I have to assume for the purposes of this discussion that he was correct about his claim. We haven't litigated that issue. So his claim is that this general order and the regulation that implemented was put into effect without notice and comment. Is that right or wrong?
That it went into immediate effect.
Yes, yes.
Without,
right. Without the notice period.
That's correct. And that further, that although the statute does provide that in emergency
rulemaking. I'm not asking for a legal defense. I'm just asking for the nature of his claim. This was his claim, right?
That was a minor aspect of his claim, and it was merely a procedural vehicle for invalidating the substance of the regulation.
Right. He wanted to invalidate the substance of a regulation that said that the chief could fire somebody for any reason or no reason, right?
Right.
Okay. So, and this applied to all the volunteer officers, right?
Correct.
Okay. So imagine exactly the same thing, except that on the day a new chief arrives, she issues the same order for all MPD officers, saying, you know what? I want to be able to remove all MPD officers for any reason or no reason, and I think there's an emergency. I'm going to do it under my emergency powers. Mr. LaFonde sues, saying you can't do that. You can't eliminate this as to all. That's against 9 different administrative law reasons. Same. Would you say the same thing, no issue of public concern?
I would have to say that because, again, it is merely a personnel matter. There's nothing.
So I just want to be clear. So under your theory, it's purely a personnel matter, even if the effect is that whatever rights the police officers had before are completely removed without notice and comment, and he sues on behalf of all police officers. Your position has to still be that that's just a personnel issue, right?
That's correct. I haven't heard anything more.
You don't think that would appear on the front page of the Washington Post?
It may or may not, but as this court is stating.
How about Legal Times? Would it appear on the front page of the Legal Times?
That I don't know. I can't speculate.
But your view is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's on the front page of every newspaper in the country that the chief of police has just announced that she has the right to fire any police officer for any or no reason. And somebody sues saying that violates the Administrative Procedure Act in the District of Columbia.
As this court said, I believe in the Fox decision, that editors are not gatekeepers of First Amendment rights. So
not
I would acknowledge that it
right.
does.
Right. So that's not the so. But who are the gatekeepers? Are you the gatekeeper? you this idea that a personnel rule that affects not just one person, but every officer would not be a matter of public concern seems a little odd. You don't think so?
No, Your Honor, I haven't heard anything more that would transform it into a matter of public concern, even if it was the subject of a media article. This court, I believe, is ultimately the gatekeeper, if you will, because it is a question of law whether something is of public concern. I would also distinguish the example.
What if the head of the civil service, the entire United States civil service, announced, from now on, we're going to fire anybody for any or no reason, and you know what? I don't care if that violates the law or not. And some civil servant, filed a lawsuit on behalf of every civil servant in the United States saying, this violates the Administrative Procedure Act. And the next day, that person was fired. No First Amendment right at all?
It sounds, again, simply a personnel matter. Now, I would distinguish, obviously, the example you give is far removed.
Let me give you another example. Imagine that your boss issued an announcement, and the United States Attorney issued an announcement, and the Attorney General issued an announcement saying that tomorrow I'm going to start firing everybody for any or no reason. And you or another or an assistant U.S. attorney or some attorney in the Justice Department filed a lawsuit saying, you can't do that, Mr. Attorney General or Mr. Attorney General of the district or Mr. United States Attorney. And the Attorney General said, well, you're fired for bringing that lawsuit. That's the reason I'm firing you, because you brought that lawsuit. Still no issue of public concern.
Still no issue of public concern. Okay. But your example is obviously
it's getting
far
worse,
removed,
isn't it? Yeah.
But it's far removed. We can distinguish that example from what we have here. This court in Griffith held that the Metropolitan Police Department's decision not to provide due process protections or administrative review for reserve officers was consistent with a number of district statutes across the board.
Well, that's the question of whether it's legal. That's the question of who's going to win the lawsuit in the end. But that's not a question necessarily of whether it, lots of people lose their lawsuits, and the lawsuits can still be of public interest.
But I think there is an element of whether the lawsuit has foundation. And the example that Your Honor is giving, suggests that there's absolutely no foundation for what the government has done.
Well, so that means we have to litigate the degree of strength of the lawsuit in order to make this determination. So in other words, you're not satisfied if it's on the front page of the Legal Times, since that's not good enough. But instead, we have to re-litigate within this case the strength of that lawsuit.
I think that to some extent that this court would. For example, in the Barnes case, there were allegations made of criminal assault, perjury by a government official. And it was ultimately, by looking at the merits, revealed that these were mere claims of hyperbole. And therefore, I think that was a factor in this court's decision in Barnes. And following Barnes and Fox, this court referred to scattershot, trumped-up claims of misbehavior. So again, to some extent, the court is looking at the foundation of what's being alleged. And so I think that's an important distinction.
That argument means you couldn't do this on the face of the complaint. That argument would require, which this was done on 12b-6, right?
Yes, Your Honor, the case.
How would we know whether a claim is trumped up just by the statement? In fact, quite the opposite. We have to assume the truth of the matter asserted.
That's true, Your Honor, but this court does not have to assume conclusory allegations. And
this isn't conclusory. He's making a legal argument about that there was no emergency here. You have an argument about why there was an emergency? Tell me a argument about what. Apparently this organization has existed for a long time. What was the emergency that required the chief of police to announce that this was going to be done without notice and comment? What was that emergency?
It was stated in the text of the publication itself that the chief felt there was a need to establish well-defined limitations for this reserve officer.
Yeah, that's, the question is, why was it an emergency? I understand the need to establish well-defined limitations. What made it an emergency? Were they doing all sorts of bad things that week, or that they had never done before, or what were they doing?
No, Your Honor. But for example, in certain circumstances, reserve officers are permitted to carry firearms.
But they had been carrying firearms for a long time. This is not, right? This wasn't a new thing.
That's correct, Your Honor. But it was a new thing that the statute had been passed actually officially creating the.
So even worse, before they were being allowed to carry firearms when there was no statute. Now suddenly there was a statute, and that created an emergency? Explain.
Your Honor, all I can point to is the face of what's in the rulemaking itself, the introductory paragraph, which explains the
reason. So what if we think that that's conclusory, in your own words? It sounds pretty conclusory. What if we think that her defense, which is that it was an emergency, is just conclusory? So why do we not give the benefit then to the plaintiff here? Because the defense that's raised is conclusory.
There was still notice. It was published. There was still opportunity to comment. Public comments were invited on the face of the rule.
After or before the rule was put into effect?
After put into effect, but it was only in effect for 1 month. And even by the time Mr. LaFonde filed his lawsuit, the rulemaking had expired by its own terms. So that's very insubstantial, we believe.
What do you mean by the rulemaking expired? The rule?
By nature of the emergency rulemaking, it could only be in effect for a limited period of time. In this case, only 30 days the rulemaking was in effect. And so it expired by its own terms, even before Mr. LaFonde filed his lawsuit.
Imagine
the general order still, I just want to be clear, the general order still remained in effect. But the emergency rulemaking was not.
Well, the emergency rulemaking promulgated the general order, didn't it?
No, Your Honor, the way I see it, they're two separate things. There's a general order, and the rulemaking was overlapped and was obviously consistent with the general order, but they weren't exactly the same.
So when the rulemaking expired, what was the status of the regulations at that point? Was it the new regime put in place by the Chief Lanier, or was it the previous rules governing the volunteers?
The new general order remained in effect, which was similar to the rulemaking, not the rulemaking. They are separate, but similar. But again, whether it's a rulemaking or a general order, the substance is a personnel matter. The procedural aspect of it does not change what is in substance a personnel matter. And it was clear from the lawsuit, the context and the content, that whatever procedural violation alleged was merely a vehicle for overturning the general order, which was a personnel dispute that Mr. LaFonde.
What if there were a file in the chief of, a memo in the chief of police's file that said, this guy has now filed another one of these embarrassing lawsuits. We're sure it's going to be on the front page of the city paper as it was, and of the Legal Times, and of the Washington Post. And that's going to make our lives difficult. We've got to fire this guy today. And what if in the bottom of that memo it said, and this is a matter of public concern, and we just can't have this anymore?
Whether it's a matter of public concern is not a question of law.
So it's not up to the chief of police. It's not up to the newspapers. It's just up to us right here.
Yes, Your Honor, it is a question of law, and the question of causation is a separate factor. And that
I'm not talking about the causation issue. I'm talking about their explanation for why they're concerned, I'm not, of course, suggesting that there is this memo in the file. I want to be clear about that. You're asking us to do this on the face of a complaint to evaluate it as, in a sense, frivolous and not even being colorable. All on the basis of the magic words personnel, which in the cases which are about personnel actions are all about individuals. There aren't maybe I'm wrong about this. Is there a case in which somebody tries to bring down the whole structure, which is what the plaintiff is doing here?
I think the Murray case is that type of case. There was a furlough plan that was at issue there, and a lot of employees were upset about this. There was a meeting. The furlough plan was just randomly drawing employees' names out of the hat. So. To determine who would be furloughed. So it affected an entire class of FBI employees in that case. I don't think that's anything different from what we have here. Mr. LaFonde was the plaintiff's attorney. There were two named plaintiffs. They proposed a class, but there's no indication that that everyone who was a reserve officer actually wanted to be a member of this class. Arguably, it affected the interests of the reserve officers, but I don't think it was any different than how it affected the rights of FBI employees as a class in the Murray case. When there was
that was totally internal, though, right? Am I wrong about that? Did he make that complaint public, or was that totally internal?
It was internal.
So does that not make a difference? This man is filing a lawsuit in public. He's asserting his rights to access to the courts. The plaintiff in Murray did nothing more than speak in front of his fellow officers privately inside the FBI, right?
Yes.
It makes it harder to be a matter of public concern if you don't make it public.
Well, this court case law is, I think, has established that just because it's in private, just internal, that doesn't mean it's not a matter of public
absolutely
concern.
Right, but it's the just because part that is important to your argument. Yeah, it's not the only thing, but it is a factor.
I can't disagree that form is not a factor, but I think content is really what controls the analysis. And I think if the content is a personnel dispute, whatever form it might take is going to be essentially irrelevant in almost every case. And I don't see why putting a personnel dispute in the form of a lawsuit makes it a matter of public concern.
The personnel dispute took the form, at least in part, and I think in primary part, of concern with of expressing alarm that under the new general order, I guess, there could be a spoils system, a political patronage system put in place.
Right? Yeah, and this court
treated that as virtually frivolous.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's an accurate way to look at that for purposes of this lawsuit as well. And there was no allegation either that there was a spoil system in the works or that this was planned or something that would contribute to the public store of knowledge about the operation of the Metropolitan Police Department. I don't think that has any merit and would salvage a case that's otherwise not of public concern. And I see that I'm out of time, so unless there are
other
questions.
It's our fault, not yours.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Addressing Judge Garland's discussion of the scale of this issue, we're talking about 200 preserve officers or more. It's supposed to be about 600, but that's never happened. This is larger than almost the vast majority of municipal police departments in the country. We're talking about an organization that's 3.5 times the size of the City of Laurel Police Department. If the City of Laurel Police Department, as Judge Garland was suggesting, were to suddenly put all their employees on notice that they'll be randomly or arbitrarily terminated, yes, I posit to Judge Ginsburg, this is a matter of public concern.
What was the city you were referring to?
City of Laurel. I'm just pulling that out.
Laurel, Maryland?
Laurel, Maryland, something close by has a municipal police department, about 65 officers, I would think, on regularly. So we're talking three and a half times the scale, just in the volunteers of these people. And I would also like to point out the Neuberger case, the District of Delaware, almost identical in terms of a officer, a lawyer filing lawsuits against the county on behalf of county employees and then being retaliated against. I would posit to the court that it should adopt the Neuberger opinion at 567 Federal Supplement 2nd, 622, as appropriate analysis of my First Amendment rights in bringing lawsuits as a member of this bar, bringing lawsuits issues to this court's attention, which this court took, including Judge Henderson on that panel, very, very seriously, issued a published opinion and said these issues hadn't been decided before. These are new issues of law. The District Columbia Court of Appeals has never decided the applicability of 5-12701 to reserve officers. Fundamentally, an issue of public concern. And the administration of public safety services for a very large city. Thank you.
You were terminated in when? January of 2008?
It was February 1st, effective February 7th, maybe 7 or 8 days before I appeared before you for oral argument.
Of 2008.
Yeah, and no stated. In fact, it said this is not an adverse action. We just don't want you anymore.
Thank you, Mr. McFadden.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted.
Stand, please.